Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 19, Episode 48. This is Writing Excuses.
Beginning with a thrill.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Won.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Dan.
I'm Howard.
And today we are going to talk about beginning with a thrill. But first, we want to tell you a little bit about what we're going to be doing all month. And this is Aaron.
Yes, this is Aaron. 15 minutes. No, I was inspired by an earlier episode that we recorded with Marshall, where we were talking about how different genres can help you understand writing in different ways. We're going to be focusing on a genre that does something really cool that you can take into your own work for the rest of the month.
I am excited to be a part of these discussions because I literally have no idea what's coming.
Well, that is also what all of the people who die at the beginning of a thriller say. Do you like that segue? So, the reason we're starting with thrillers is because thrillers and mysteries as a genre tend to start with a bang. You need to ask a big enough, flashy enough question that will pull the readers through the rest of the story, and you need to do it right off the bat, kind of establish this is the kind of story you're in. You know, where we see this most bluntly is in like a detective show on TV, where the cold open is some random person we've never seen being murdered, and then the rest of the show is trying to figure out who did it or why they did it or how they did it or whatever it is.
Sandra and I will play a game when we're watching those shows. And the game is the moment we see someone on TV, we decide whether they discover a body or become a body. Because it's one of those two things.
Is about to happen. Well, and this is one of the things that that I love is that that discovery of the body or becoming the body doesn't actually have to be the very first thing that happens in the novel. But usually when you're watching those cold open scenes, there's something small that goes wrong first. And so what I like looking for is something that goes wrong that kind of sets the tone that is going to lead directly to the big problem, but is not necessarily the big problem. I've learned that dropping the body in the first chapter is not always the best thing to do,
mm-hmm.
as tempting as it is.
Yeah, there's one of my favorite mystery genres is called the How Ketchum, which is related to whodunit, where the main question is who killed this person. A How Ketchum story is we know who did it, but we are watching the detective to see if they're going to be able to figure out who did it and stop them. And the way this often starts is we will see the killer first. They're not going to discover or become a body. They're going to produce a body at some point. And often the way this goes is we get to watch, you know, all the things that are wrong in their life. You know, the person who bugs them, or, you know, the aspect of their life that needles at them. And we can tell that sooner or later this person's going to explode. And that is the kind of tension you can draw out for a while, because it's just ominous enough and it's tense enough that it does ask that big flashy question. What is this person going to do to get out of the situation they hate?
And this is usually, at least in terms of bookstore genre, one of the distinctions between thriller and mystery. When you know who the killer is up front, and then the tension is more about, will the hero figure that out? And then as you have that sort of cat and mouse kind of perspective, that's how you ratchet up the tension, rather than the mystery being what pulls you forward into who actually did this thing, right? So it's kind of two distinct hooks that define these two genres.
There's a secondary principle at work here, which is that when you present that big question, you want the reader to already trust you that you are eventually going to provide an answer. And the way to build that trust is that somewhere in the first page, somewhere in the first 10 pages or the first chapter, you want to be asking smaller questions and providing answers. Small questions provide answers. Small question, delay the gratification for the answer, get another question, and then, oh, here's the answer. And you set this pattern up for the reader where they realize, oh, yes, I am curious, and then I am sated, and then I am curious, and I am sated, and then I am desperately curious, and that's the page turn for the next chapter.
So I have a question. So I'm thinking about a book where I'm reading about someone going through, you know, their life and things are bad. And I'm wondering, you know that I bought a thriller. Like, you know, I brought it from the thriller section of the bookstore. So I'm probably anticipating that, like, this bad thing will end in a body one way or the other. But how much of that, let's assume that I didn't know that it was a thriller. I bought it with, like, you know, no knowledge of the book at all. What is it that you're doing in order to make this feel like it's tense, like something's about to go wrong in this person's life in a murder type way, and not just like a day in the life of a guy whose life sucks?
Yeah. And that is a very good question to ask. That's where I was going to try to go next, because this is called starting with a thrill, not starting with a long, slow burn. Although those can often be the same if you're very good at it. We talked earlier in the year about the establishing shot. And when you are writing a book or a short story, you know, the very first thing that you show us is kind of telling us what kind of story this will be. If you start your mystery novel off with a fight scene, then you're telling us this is going to be an action movie or maybe a thriller. And if that's not actually what it is, the death has to be more abrupt, or, you know, less of a back and forth. There needs to be less interaction in the way this person dies. But if you were doing, for example, an episode of TV or a movie, you could get away with a lot of that tension you're talking about with musical cues and stuff. Weird shots, a weird POV shot that makes us feel like this person is being watched or followed, spooky music to let us say, oh no, this person's going to die. The way you can create that, I should say one of the ways you can recreate that in a novel where you don't have music and things like that, is to just draw things out. Focus on details that don't seem as if they should be important, because that makes readers nervous. Why is it taking two paragraphs to find her keys before she can get into her house? Things like that. Which is, the purpose here is not to bore the reader. This has to be tense and interesting. You're giving us little micro tensions of, oh no, something's wrong. Oh, okay, they got out of it. Oh no, this other thing is going wrong. Oh, they got out of it. Why is he describing so much about this, you know, the type of whatever? It's to put readers on edge, take them out of comfortable territory.
Another tool that you can use along those lines is having the character notice that something is wrong. So the character who is approaching their house and is like, that's weird, I don't remember leaving a light on. and having the using POV to signal to the reader things are about to be mm-hmm. not okay.
Yeah, and speaking of character, you can absolutely in prose do the freaky POV shot that you would get in a TV show. If the whole first scene is a couple just came home from a date and they're flirting with each other as they walk through their house and they talk about their bank accounts while they take their clothes off, but we're seeing the entire thing from some third perspective. Someone is listening to them. Even if that listener is never identified, and you drop hints about how they can't see what they're wearing yet or whatever it is, but it's obvious that this very private, intimate conversation is being eavesdropped on, even without any direct mention of danger or threat, that's invasive and puts us on edge.
That really is invasive and does put me on edge.
Let's come back to what it feels like to be on edge after this break.
Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
An O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card is the perfect gift for that hard-to-buy-for person. Give the gift of convenience from O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
One thing I've really enjoyed recently is Yorgos Lanthimos' The Favorite, which was released in 2018. It's a brilliant historical satire about a rivalry between two of Queen Anne's ladies, played by Emma Stone and Kate Winslet. The Queen herself is played by Olivia Colman in a brilliant, hilarious, and tragic performance. It's sort of like All About Eve, but with an even more biting edge and a lot to say about class, privilege, and power, all wrapped up in a strange, almost surrealist aesthetic. It's a really wonderful movie, and I highly recommend it.
One of my other favorite tools to use to make things tense is language. So the word choice that I pick... if I'm describing a rose and I want it to be a romance, then I'm going to talk about all of the beautiful, perfect things about the rose. But if I'm setting up for a thriller or a mystery or a horror, then I'm going to be talking about like the diseased leaf on the rose. And even the words that I'm going to use are going to be much more visceral. I'm going to reach for the ones that are darker. And those are some fun things that you can do to set tone in the same way that a film would be able to set tone.
When you put things in a scene and, shine lights on them, you can make us comfortable, you can make us uncomfortable. The easiest example I can think of is someone, striking a match or lighting a lighter, and we see a cigarette and we see the end of a fuse. Those are two very, very different things. And knowing what your stand-in will be for the fuse or for the cigarette or for the stove that requires a lighter. I don't know. Knowing what your stand-in is, that's your job, not mine.
Okay, I have another question.
Okay.
And this one is, let's say I woke up and I decided not to choose violence. And I was like, no murders here, but I still want to use these techniques in my story to draw the reader in. What should I be doing?
You're getting to all my points right before I get to them. We're on the same wavelength here. Because I would wager that a vast majority of our listeners right now are not writing thrillers. They're probably writing fantasy or science fiction, which can include thriller or mystery elements. But we focus so much on tension, whereas what we really are talking about is starting with a thrill, starting with a bang. And that doesn't have to mean a burst of action or violence. What it really means for me is something that is unexpected and or shocking that hooks us into the book. And maybe that is the person we thought the main character dies, and okay, now I'm in for the rest of the book. I want to see who did this. Maybe that is something like, you present to us an idyllic shire full of wonderful hobbits, and then a mysterious stranger shows up that nobody trusts. And then even if you haven't introduced our main conflict, you've introduced a conflict. We know that there is the potential for danger, that things could go wrong. What about the rest of you? What answers do you have?
You know, one thing I like to think about when thinking about writing in these different genres is that a genre is really made up of a whole bunch of tropes, right? It's a whole bunch of individual patterns that we recognize of like, oh, this has spaceships. Oh, this farm boy found a sword. Oh, this, that, or the other that tell us we're in science fiction, that tell us we're in fantasy. But there's a thing that I think of as like micro tropes or micro patterns where you can pick and choose from other genres and pull them in to the main genre that you're working on. So, you know, this is exactly what Dan's talking about in terms of having a beat early on that's like maybe a thriller beat. You can have that moment where somebody's trying to find their keys or a key card or whatever it is. And that can increase just have that little hint of the thriller tension in there. And then you don't have to have bodies hitting the floor at that point. You can go into a different scene. You can go into a boardroom. You can go into, you know, the bridge of a starship, whatever it happens to be. But you can use those little micro tropes, those little micro beats to really goose it in the way that you want, right? So don't be afraid to steal from other genres and to do a little bit of mix and match while still hitting the big beats that you want to say, this is science fiction, this is fantasy.
Yeah, I find that one of those small beats is just a disruption of normal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like what breaks their normal? And you don't have to have normal established very long before it breaks. And I think that one of the things for me with the thriller pacing is that break in normal comes very early. It's not, you know, three chapters in. It's something that happens usually on the first or second page.
If you throw a meet cute into the first couple of pages, you can absolutely start with a thrill and just take us at a dead run into a romance.
So just in case people have never heard this phrase before, that is meet as in meet each other, not meet as in meet cube, which is what I first heard
did
him say.
Did we all think meet cube? Because every last time talking about bodies, I just really thought that's where we're going.
You guys don't put meet cubes into the first chapters of your books? That's super weird.
I love to start a romance with a meet cube.
When the two meet cubes meet, I'm so sorry.
I did read a book once that had, come here, you big hunk of love beef.
Cool.
Oh, man.
Don't like that.
That is not what I would name my meat cube. I say as if I don't already have one. So one way that I see this done wrong very frequently by aspiring writers is that they are trying to present their world, establish who the characters are and where the story takes place. And the way that they try to introduce tension in those early chapters is through world building by saying, yes, we're in an idyllic shire, but we never leave here because there's monsters in the woods, or because there's evil travelers on the road sometimes, or because there's a dark lord that every 7 years will come and eat one of us. I mean, yes, you're adding some darkness to the world, but you're not adding darkness to the story. This needs to be some kind of action. You know, those mysterious strangers on the road need to show up, or something has to, as was said, disrupt normal in some way. There has to be an immediate danger, not just the backstory of danger.
Yeah, because for people who, you know, Dark Lord shows up every 7 years, terrible people on the road, that is their normal. And so they continue to go about their day-to-day life. What is it that breaks their day-to-day life that is the foretelling of the foreshadowing of the bigger thing that's coming?
Yeah, and I also think that there's something that can happen where you, like, one of the things that I love about thrillers and mysteries is that the thing that goes wrong is something that we instinctively know is bad. Like, people dying, we're not a fan, like, in general. And so when you're trying to create that for another genre, it's what is the thing that is, like, wrong in your world? What is the thing that, like, would throw things off? If the dragon shows up on year 6 instead of year 7, that's going to feel very, very wrong in a way that is very unique to the world that you've created. So a lot of times it's thinking about what are the things that would startle the people not that are in your world, and then how would they deal with that?
Well, this is why giving your character stakes early on are so important, right? It's why you have to start page one, really, with something your character cares about. Ideally, another person, but it could be some goal that they have, right? That's their normal. Their normal is trying to get to school to give the girl the note that you've been thinking about giving her all week, and then something happens on the way to school, right? You need to have the thing to be disrupted, not just to be a normal everyday day, but something that somebody cares about their day, right? Somebody has to give a big presentation. So then when they can't get their key card and then they can't get into the room, you know, now you have a cascade series of events where things are going wrong. But to make those, you know, scary things that are coming into the world feel threatening, you have to give the character something they care about so that I care about the character and what they care about.
Yeah. One of my favorite examples of this, believe it or not, is the first Toy Story movie. Which we don't think of as a thriller, but that movie, you know, starts with a kid playing with his toys, and then we get the little premise of, oh, the toys are awake when he goes out of the room, and then we don't get the actual, like, inciting incident main plot conflict for a while. But what we do get right off the bat is the birthday party, and the toys lose their minds over that, because this, to them, disrupts their normal. They know that it has the potential to change everything. And so we haven't gotten to Buzz. We haven't gotten to the whole Woody's not the favorite anymore. None of that has arrived yet. But we do have a conflict that, through their eyes, we can understand is very meaningful to them. And there's a lot of action. There's a lot of motion. There's a lot of thrill to it. And then 4 or 5 scenes later, we get the full actual, oh, this, the real plot has arrived now. We have basically run out of time now. We want to give you plenty of time to write. And so we are going to end with homework.
And that homework is, what breaks normal for your character right now? The next thing you write, how does normal break for them? This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Have you ever wanted to ask one of the Writing Excuses hosts for very specific, very you-focused help? There's an offering on the Writing Excuses Patreon that will let you do exactly that. The private instruction tier includes everything from the lower tiers, plus a quarterly one-on-one Zoom meeting with a host of your choice. You might choose, for example, to work with me on your humorous prose, engage Dong Wan's expertise on your world-building, or study with Aaron to level up your game writing. Visit patreon.com/writingexcuses for more details.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dong Wan Song, Aaron Roberts, Dan Wells, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
This holiday season, recharge with the Planet Fitness Black Card for just $1 down and $24.99 a month. So instead of fighting a stranger in the mall over a stuffed T-Rex, bring a friend for free and work out on the TRX. Instead of freezing in line for a lame holiday deal, relax in the Black Card spa with some hydro massage feels. Instead of being trapped at your in-laws,
honey,
escape to any of our 2,600 Planet Fitness locations. Sign up today for the Planet Fitness Black Card. Just $1 down and $24.99 a month. Deal ends Friday, December 6th. See club for details.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.